Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. In 1995, Jeff Bezos started Amazon as an online bookstore. The multi-billion dollar company, which some venture capitalists predict will be a multi-trillion dollar company within the next 10 years, has grown astronomically. Today, nearly half of all U.S. households subscribe to its membership program, Amazon Prime. They buy books, coffee, toys, electronics, clothes, and TV shows. You can buy everything from obscure to daily necessities on the website. When people go online to shop, half of all searches begin at Amazon.com. The company captures half of every dollar of online purchases. That's according to a new report from the Institute for Local Self-Reliance. The report finds that Amazon is causing the number of independent merchants to decline sharply, undermining jobs and wages, and affecting local tax bases. Amazon's growing market share has so far caused more than 135 million square feet of retail space to become vacant. That's the equivalent of about 700 empty big box stores and 22,000 shuttered Main Street businesses. 22,000. Amazon has eliminated about 149,000 more jobs in retail than it has created in its warehouses, and the pace of layoffs is accelerating as Amazon grows. The report analyzed the company's wages in 11 areas and found that Amazon pays an average of 15% less than the prevailing wage for other warehouse workers in the same region. By local advocates say, now more than ever, it's so important to shop in your community. So on today's Your Call, we are talking about this new study and the importance of shopping local. Today, we are joined by Olivia LaVecchia, a researcher with the Institute for Local Self-Reliance, an organization that champions local self-reliance. Olivia co-authored the report, Amazon's Stranglehold, How the Company's Tightening Grip is Stifling Competition, Eroding Jobs, and Threatening Communities. Hi, Olivia. Welcome to the show.
Hello. Thank you for having me. It's great to be here.
Well, it's great to have you. We are also joined by Susanna Morales-Konishi, Executive Director of Oakland Grown. That's a program that supports the local economy by encouraging citizens to shop local. Oakland Grown also works with independent businesses and artists to support their growth and development. Susanna is also a small business owner and grew up in Oakland's Fruitvale District, and she joins me here in studio. Hi, Susanna. Thank you for coming in.
Thank you.
Great to have you. Olivia, I want to start off with you. This is a massive report, just over 70 pages, and you looked at everything from jobs to competition to the tax base, subsidies. First off, how did you begin to tackle this report? How did you get your hands on so much important data?
Oh, well, thank you. It was really, there was a lot here to dig into. One of the reasons we really started looking at this is because it's something that we were hearing from local businesses. Every year we conduct a national survey of local businesses, and last year about 3,000 businesses responded. And one of the things that we were hearing from them is that increasingly they see Amazon as the biggest threat to their business. You know, not big box retail, not health insurance for their employees, but this huge competitor, increasingly taking business away.
We've been talking about this for a long time. I was a tech reporter back in the mid-90s when all of these things just started. And even back then, people were saying, what is this going to do to our local community and our local bookstores? Talk a little bit about this, Susanna. And, you know, here we are 20 years later. What's really happening today? Because everyone knows that this is happening, but it seems like this report has such a sense of urgency.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I think that our businesses and our local independent businesses and our, you know, neighborhoods that we all love and really care about are really suffering and are really beginning to see the changes. And it's causing a great impact to them as just being able to survive in the communities and stay in the city. For example, in Oakland, our locally independent businesses are, you know, facing a number of great challenges right now with the housing crisis in Oakland and everything else that's happening in that city. So to know that their business and something that they started to create community and to support their families is in danger, I think it's just, it's urgent.
Right. And you also know that, and you've experienced this, people go into stores and write down or take photos of things they want to buy, and then they go home and they buy it on Amazon.
Yeah. This weekend, we noticed as we were walking around our neighborhood that a business that's been there for decades and it's owned by a family had a flyer, just a very simple printed flyer saying, please don't use this as your fitting room. And I thought, that's interesting. I don't really know what that means. And then through the meetings of the week, I learned that people are actually going into these little shops, trying out shoes, looking at clothes, whatever they're looking for. And they have, you know, they have, they even walk out of the store with their app open to order it online. And I think our businesses are just really noticing this, and it's causing chaos.
Let's talk about some of the findings. Olivia, it's amazing to think that when people go online to shop, half of all searches start at Amazon.com. And your report also found that Amazon captures half of every dollar of online purchases.
Right, yes. The company's dominance has really become amazing. And, you know, it's interesting what you say about search in particular. Because one of the consequences of that is that, you know, increasingly anyone who wants to sell something online, they face this difficult decision of, you know, choosing to advertise on other search engines or try to drive business to their own e-commerce site or choosing to become a third-party seller in Amazon's marketplace. And so that's part of what we look at in this report, how Amazon's impact on local businesses isn't just that, you know, it's a direct retailer competing with them, but actually this other thing that a lot of people might not realize, but that half of all of the sales on Amazon's site are through a third-party marketplace, and increasingly local businesses, other businesses who want to be able to do sales online are being compelled by Amazon's dominance in this area to become marketplace sellers and have to kind of turn themselves over to one of their biggest competitors.
And I'm sure that's something that a lot of people don't think about, just because you can buy pretty much anything on Amazon these days. Can you talk a little bit more about that, how the third-party seller relationship, just what that looks like between Amazon and, say, a local business?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, who these sellers are is something that we look at in the report. And there are some of them who weren't local businesses before. They're kind of more like stockbrokers. They look at, you know, what's moving and never really interact with the product. But a lot of them are, you know, existing businesses who might have had an e-commerce business in the past and it wasn't doing as well anymore, so decided to take the leap and have to become dependent on Amazon. And this relationship is really not one that is in favor of these sellers, you know, from the fact that Amazon charges them a significant fee. So it becomes kind of like a tax on all of this commerce that's happening on Amazon's platform. And, you know, Amazon also collects a lot of data. So one of the things that we look at in the report is that there's this history of Amazon watching what sellers do and learning from them. And if you're a seller and you have a lot of knowledge of your product category, Amazon watches your inventory, sees what you're doing, takes the most successful products, and then, you know, it's not just a platform, it's also a retailer, and starts selling those products itself. There's also, it introduces a whole new level of precariousness to the business, because you become dependent on them in this way where they can suspend sellers without cause, they can raise fees. Amazon comes to have a lot of control over some of the basic building blocks of the seller's business.
We do a lot of shows about privacy on Your Call. And when you think about the fact that when people go to shop, half of their searches start at Amazon, and then half of the country is subscribed to this membership program, Amazon Prime. What kind of data does this company have about people, and what do they do with this information?
Well, the answer to the first part of that question is quite a lot. Amazon has quite a lot of data and is increasingly collecting more. You know, one of their recent products is they've come up with this Echo speaker. And it's, the idea is that it's in your home and it's kind of always listening for you to say the wake word and then interact with it, ask it questions. It's collecting data on all of that. As far as what Amazon is doing with it, it's pretty opaque. There's a lot that we don't know about that. But what we do know is that, you know, it certainly is serving Amazon's interests, and Amazon's interests are not always the same thing as all of our interests or the public interest.
That is Olivia Lavicchia. She's a researcher with the Institute for Local Self-Reliance. They just came out with a new report, which Olivia co-authored, Amazon's Stranglehold, How the Company's Tightening Grip is Stifling Competition, Eroding Jobs, and Threatening Communities. We're also joined by Susanna Morales-Konishi, Executive Director of Oakland Grown. That's a program that supports the local economy by encouraging citizens to shop local. Susanna is also a small business owner and grew up in Oakland's Fruitvale District. And we'd love to hear from you. What are your thoughts? What questions do you have about what this report found? When you look at jobs, for example, the company's wages in 11 areas, it looked at the company's wages, and it found that Amazon pays about 15% less than the prevailing wage for other warehouse workers. It also found that Amazon is just growing by leaps and bounds. So we'd love to hear from you. Do you shop at Amazon? Are you concerned about what this report has found about privacy, about how Amazon is affecting local communities? I know it's easy. It's so easy to go online, and in many cases, it's cheaper. In fact, this report also found that Amazon sells products for cheaper than it buys in order to keep getting people to come back. So it's undercutting other companies. And what would it take for you to spend maybe more of your time and money with a local business? And if you've seen a community change because of Amazon, we'd love to hear from you, or even other online stores, big stores. 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org or leave a comment on our website, or you can tweet us. We have a question from Lauren, who says, I'm curious to hear about the strategies that local businesses can borrow from Amazon to bring people back to their stores. For example, same-day delivery, a percentage of sales going to local causes, pricing flexibility. She said she just bought a camera locally, and she's excited there's a person there who will help her learn how to use it. It offset the pinch of paying the 9.5% tax, $80 in this case. What would you say, Susanna?
So I think that there are some really innovative small business owners in Oakland that are trying to do different things. There's a new small business owner who is working with the independently owned bookstores and trying to get them all to be on the same page and supporting them to digitize their inventory. So when you order through her website, she'll call the bookstores and say, do you have this one book? And if they have it, then she'll pick it up and then she delivers it. Or if you meet with her for coffee, like I sometimes do, she'll give you the book. And I think that that's a really beautiful way of creating community within the bookstores and within someone who's supporting their development and understanding how to join the digital world of selling books online. I think our other small business owners are also doing a lot of, you know, really innovative, creative things, from having more events at their bookstores, really making the businesses, making them more of a community center so that there's other things happening within those places. So coffee shops, inviting authors or inviting community leaders or opening their doors for community forums, all of those different things. I think that they're trying to bring in people back, but really see a different value to what they bring to the community.
And Olivia, do you have anything to add?
I would just echo Susanna that, you know, a lot of locally owned independent businesses are already really innovative. We're talking about smart business people, and I think there are a lot of ways in which they offer a lot of convenience that might be, you know, different than some of the conveniences that people find on Amazon. But for instance, just the other day, I was looking for a holiday present for my brother, and I just called my local bookseller and said, I'm looking for a book with hikes in this general area. And 2 days later, I got a call that they had special ordered 50 best hikes in the Hudson Valley, and it was ready in store. So I think there are a lot of ways that local business owners are a really entrepreneurial bunch and already offering a lot of convenience.
Well, if you're a local business or a small business owner, we'd love to hear from you. How has your business been affected by online shopping? And what have you done to try to get more people to spend time in your store and to spend money locally? A lot of local business advocates say now more than ever, it's really important to shop locally because we're losing so much. So many bookstores are shutting down. So many stores that have been in our communities for decades are shutting down, especially here in the Bay Area where rents are so high. So if you'd like to join us to talk about what you've experienced, the toll-free number is 866-798-8255. If you're an Amazon third-party seller, we'd love to hear about your experience. And then if you're an avid Amazon user, tell us why you like it and what would make you shop more locally. 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. Thank you for the email, Lauren. We have another email from Laura who says, saving the local economy and the middle class should not fall on the shoulders of local consumers who themselves are hanging by their economic fingernails. We need a national policy enforced by the government that mandates a living wage for all workers, including Amazon workers. And it should be a living wage, close to $27 an hour, and not just a minimum wage, which is not enough to live on. We need to demand systemic change. Well, thank you for that, Laura. Let's talk about what you found in your report, Olivia, about pay. You found that you looked at the company's wages in 11 metro areas, and Amazon, which usually hires through a third party, so they outsource to contractors, they pay about 15% less than the prevailing wage for other warehouse workers in the same region. Tell us about those findings.
That's right. And, you know, it's important to note, Sarah, that it's not as though warehouse work is already particularly well paid. It's that Amazon is taking wages and working conditions in a sector where both of those are already quite low and pushing them down even further. So one of the 11 areas that we looked at is the Inland Empire in Southern California, San Bernardino area. And that's a place where Amazon has 9 large facilities. Those locations received public money. They were subsidized. And Amazon's wage is 11% lower than the prevailing wage for comparable work in that area. Absolutely, the wage standards are low. And also, you know, something else that comes up is simply the quality of these jobs. Where Amazon builds its warehouses and its fulfillment infrastructure a lot like machines. And at its facilities, the roles of the workers are kind of interchangeable. There are the parts in those machines. We talked to workers and heard stories from workers, you know, that say, talk about walking many miles through the day, constant bending and lifting and reaching. Amazon's own job postings, you know, discuss 10 to 12 hour shifts, mandatory overtime. We're talking about really grueling, dehumanizing work.
Mother Jones and other publications have done really great reporting on this. In fact, one reporter went undercover. And so these warehouses are just massive. And you might have to run from the children's book section over to the body care section to the jeans section. And they time you. And she was saying that at the end of the day, her body just killed her. There were also reports a couple of years ago about not enough air conditioning in the warehouses. Have some of these problems been taken care of?
Many of them still exist. I know after that one big investigation a few years ago, Amazon did introduce air conditioning in more of its facilities, but still, even in its very own job postings, the advertising for these positions, it says temperatures will range between 60 and 90 degrees and sometimes exceed 90 degrees.
Wow.
And people are on their feet really long hours in that type of condition.
Susanna, can you talk about this, just about wages? I mean, so many people are having a hard time getting by. I was recently in Mendocino talking with small business owners there, and they say we are part of the community. Some of our workers are taking this job as a supplemental income to buy groceries. And so therefore, we pay well over the minimum wage mm-hmm. because we know them. They're part of our community. We're connected to them. Mm-hmm. Can you talk about that?
Yeah. So Oakland has been very active around the minimum wage for a number of years. But there's a couple of really, again, you know, innovative social entrepreneurs that have focused on ensuring that not only do they hire local, but that they really do provide a fair minimum wage. And you go into these little cafes now in Oakland and you see a sign saying, you know, we are paying our employees a fair minimum wage and we are treating them like our family. Mm. And that sometimes can make your coffee cost a little bit more, but that's what we're doing. And so we invite you and encourage you to support us. And you see that more and more in Oakland now. And I think everybody's getting to that point where we understand what it's like to buy local and, you know, support our local businesses. And if it means paying a little bit extra for the cup of coffee we're getting in the morning, but we know that their employees are happy, the business is thriving, and they're going to stay in the neighborhood, we're happy to do it. And I think that that's part of the awareness that we're trying to promote with the different initiatives in Oakland, but also the business owners and the work that they do around advocacy and really getting out there and doing community outreach and education.
What about benefits? Because a lot of the Amazon warehouse workers are mm-hmm. contractors. They don't have benefits.
Yeah, no, I think our small business owners are very different than that. I think that, you know, they treat their employees like family and their friends. And so it's they get a package if they're capable and if they can do it, right? They really do support the family unit, not just... They were not just looking at the bottom line of their profit. It's more about, you know, we're investing in the community and we want you all to be part of the community. So I think it's a different environment altogether.
All right. Well, thank you so much for calling in, Laurel, about wages. That's also a really important part of this story. Let's go to Danny in Richmond. Hi, Danny. Welcome to the show. Hi, Danny. Do you hear us?
On these gigantic warehouse expansions that Amazon and other are doing in San Bernardino County. But these are way out in places like Marengo Valley.
Sorry, Danny, we cut you off in the beginning there. Can you? Amazon is expanding massively in San Bernardino. Is that what you said?
That's correct.
Okay.
There's a lot of giant warehouse expansions happening down there. I'm working with the law firm that I worked with on the Lumber Liquidators case to... try to stop these things from going through without environmental impact reports. Mm-hmm. So in the Marengo Valley, which is way outside of the city of San Bernardino, sort of out in the middle of nowhere, but still in the county, Amazon wants to build a 4 million square foot warehouse.
Wow.
Gigantic footprint, not just even to mention all the trucks that will come in and out with diesel emissions, et cetera. And I don't think that a lot of people in the state are aware of these giant expansions happening. In fact, there are 21 proposals that are due to be decided on without an environmental impact report in San Bernardino County area by December 24th.
And why don't these have an environmental impact report?
Well, let's talk about San Bernardino County and the politics there.
Hmm.
You know, you've got Warren Buffett, BNSF, and his big rail yard there. It's just politically, if I can use the term, incorrect down there. And, of course, they want to shove these things through real fast, right?
Well, right, and people need jobs.
Yeah, and you got the jobs argument. You got Trump as president. They're just saying, well, it's a negative declaration to build a 4 million square foot warehouse with all the trucks that are going to serve that is not going to have an impact on the environment, on air quality, on the community.
Hmm.
I mean, that's just a ridiculous proposition. And the other thing they always do, and I want to point that out again, is that when these things come up for public comment and decision is between Thanksgiving and Christmas.
Hmm.
And how many of us have time to deal with all this on top of the holidays?
Right.
It's a pattern. You know, it's been happening for decades.
Well, thank you so much for calling in, Danny. Olivia, did the report look at this? Why, when Amazon comes to town, in the case of San Bernardino, there's no environmental impact report?
You know, it's not something that we covered directly in the report, but there is another aspect of Danny's comment that I think is really important to underline, too. And that is that, you know, you're in the Bay Area, and Amazon is expanding in the Inland Empire, but that's a different part of the state. And that's really something that we're seeing, that as Amazon is expanding, there are fewer jobs overall, you know, as spending shifts to Amazon and away from other types of businesses that employ more people, but also that these jobs become geographically concentrated. And traditionally, retail has been a huge driver of employment. One out of every eight jobs is in the retail sector, and these are jobs that exist the same whether you're in rural Maine or in Berkeley. But now they're concentrated in places like San Bernardino County, and away from other areas that are mostly experiencing only layoffs. So when we're talking about a job creation argument, there's a lot of important context there, too.
Right. I was going to ask you to elaborate on the part of the report that found Amazon has eliminated about 149,000 more jobs in retail than it has created in its warehouse, and the pace of layoffs is accelerating.
That's right, yes. And we found that that's happening. You know, it's the company employed 146,000 U.S. workers at the end of 2015, and that's not just in its warehouses. That's across all of its operations. So these are actually very conservative job loss figures. But those workers who it employed, that came at the cost of about 295,000 jobs lost at brick-and-mortar retail stores and other e-commerce businesses. So, yeah, we're talking about a net loss overall.
And also, I wanted you to talk about the report that found Amazon has pocketed about $613 million in public subsidies for its fulfillment facilities since 2005, and more than half of the 77 large facilities it built between 2005 and 2014 have been subsidized by taxpayers.
Absolutely. You know, people like to say that Amazon likes to tell this story about itself, that it has outcompeted other businesses, that it's innovative, and that's part of how it's achieved its dominant market position. But really, from the very beginning, 1995, Amazon, a big part of its strategy has been organized around public money. At first, in sales tax evasion, where Jeff Bezos was looking at headquartering Amazon in San Francisco or in Seattle, and he chose Seattle because Washington is a smaller state, and so he would have to collect sales tax from fewer consumers. And sales tax remains an important, and the online sales tax loophole remains an important part of Amazon's strategy. To this day, Amazon doesn't collect sales tax in 16 states. But in recent years, as Amazon has really been building out its logistics infrastructure and building distribution centers closer to cities so that it can get two-day delivery, one-day delivery, two-hour delivery, one-hour delivery now even, it has kind of changed its strategy and pivoted to getting the facilities to be heavily subsidized. All told, right, between just looking at the subsidies for those facilities alone, it's more than $500 million.
Wow. As Amazon continues to expand its reach, Olivia, how are you trying to convince people to shop locally at a time when people want things right now? You've got a lot of young people working in tech moving to the Bay Area who do everything on their phones. How do you convince people, especially young people, that it's important to shop locally and support community businesses?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's an ongoing question. But one of the things I would point out there is that, you know, when we're talking about that, we're talking about what are some of the things we're looking for as consumers. And I think there are actually a lot of ways in which Amazon and Amazon's increasing control over the economy has negative impacts on us as consumers, from raising prices for certain kinds of products to less innovation and experimentation in the market overall. But then there are all of these ways that Amazon impacts us, you know, not just as shoppers, as consumers, But we're also people who want to be able to start businesses, who want to have meaningful jobs, who are taxpayers and, you know, rely on having robust revenue sources, who are neighbors, who want to be able to walk on streets and pass businesses that we know, run into people who we know who are also running their errands. So I think part of it is really accounting for other parts of what we need in the economy beyond just the kind of one-click checkout.
And before we let you go, Olivia, Jeff Bezos, who owns Amazon, also owns the Washington Post. How does the Washington Post cover these issues? Did it cover your study?
That is a good question. The Washington Post does not cover Amazon as robustly as some of the other national outlets do, and that's something I am curious to talk with them about more.
I've been wanting to do a show about how coverage has changed at the Washington Post under Jeff Bezos, so I'm going to add that to my list. Olivia, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me. This was a great discussion.
Thank you. Olivia LaVecchia is a researcher with the Institute for Local Self-Reliance and co-author of the report Amazon's Stranglehold, How the Company's Tightening Grip is Stifling Competition, Eroding Jobs, and Threatening Communities. And you can find that report at yourcallradio.org. Coming up after the break, we'll continue our discussion and focus more on the importance of buying locally with Susanna Morales-Konishi, Executive Director of Oakland Grown. This is Your Call. We'll be back after this.
This is Your Call on KALW, a show that relies on engaged listeners. You can join today's conversation by calling 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-8255, toll free. And you can post a comment or question at yourcallradio.org, or you may tweet us at yourcallradio.
This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, we will have a conversation with science historian Naomi Oreskes. She is in town for a big conference with about 26,000 scientists, and she was at the Save Science rally on Tuesday, saying that this is a very frightening moment. We have seen how the reins of the federal government are being handed over to the fossil fuel industry. We have to do something now. Naomi Oreskes also wrote the book Merchants of Doubt. We've done a show about that and talked about the documentary of the same name. So I hope you can join us tomorrow to find out how scientists are fighting back under Donald Trump. And today we are talking about the importance of buying local. There's a new report out from the Institute for Local Self-Reliance called Amazon's Stranglehold, How the Company's Tightening Grip is Stifling Competition, Eroding Jobs, and Threatening Communities. And we'd love to hear from you. If you're a local business or a small business owner, what has your experience been like over the years with these websites like Amazon, where half of all searches happen there, half of all dollars are spent at Amazon? What are you doing to try to get people to shop in your store and to shop locally? And then if you shop at Amazon, I know that it's so convenient and so fast and in some cases cheaper, but what are your thoughts about the effect it has on your community? The toll-free number is 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback at yourcallradio.org, leave a comment on our website, or you can tweet us at yourcallradio. Susanna Morales-Konishi is Executive Director of Oakland Grown, a program that supports the local economy by encouraging citizens to shop local. She's a small business owner and grew up in Oakland's Fruitvale District. And now I would like to welcome Alia Baker to the show. Alia opened Show and Tell Concept Shop. It's a sustainable boutique in downtown Oakland. She's been running it since 2011. Hi, Alia. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Well, thank you so much for joining us. First off, we were just talking about this new report looking at how Amazon affects local communities. And this is not a new conversation. We've been talking about this for years. But this report is pretty extensive, and it seems like there's an urgency because so many people are now going online. Since you've opened your shop since 2011, what changes have you seen as a result of giants like Amazon.com?
I think that the main change that we've seen is that it's harder and harder to get people in the doors. So trying to grow a business and keep consistent traffic tends to be a little bit difficult when folks have readily available options like Amazon to find what they're looking for.
And what are you doing to try to get people into your store? We had a listener earlier saying, you know, is there anything that stores are offering to entice people to not buy online and to go into stores?
So the challenge is small business such as mine can't really compete with Amazon in terms of price. So what we try to offer are in-store experiences that you can't replicate online, as well as unique handmade one-of-a-kind goods that you can't find on Amazon. So I spend a lot of my time sourcing new up-and-coming designers and looking for things that are really quite different in the marketplace that you can't replicate in a mass kind of setting.
And Susanna, Alia mentioned price. We didn't spend much time talking about this with Olivia, but the report also found that Amazon undercuts competition. So let's say a Kindle costs $100, and that's Amazon's cost. In some cases, they'll sell it for $75 because you can't find that anywhere for that price, knowing that they're going to lose money, but they're hoping that they'll keep that customer in the long run. So it's really almost impossible for stores to keep up with these prices, right?
Yeah. I think, you know, it's really a lot about how much you value your community. Mm-hmm. I think that we talk about how shopping local tends to be a little bit more expensive, and that's just the reality of things. You know, you have to, it's an investment. But you're really investing in the community and what you believe in and really demonstrating what your values are. So if you start shifting your spending habits and start shopping locally and supporting the local businesses, you know you're contributing not just to the local business and to the community, but really to the infrastructure of the city. So out of $100 that you spend locally, about $47 stay within your community, and that supports the libraries, the police, and other services that we all need in order to be safe and happy where we live.
What about cities and local governments? What are they doing to support local businesses at a time when rents are tripling in some cases, quadrupling?
Mm-hmm. So Oakland is a really interesting city. And what Oakland has just started doing, and this is very recent, is that they formed a small business task force. And they're meeting on a regular basis to really start thinking about the challenges that the small business owners are beginning to see or are continuing to see, and how to create this collective force of change for good and to make sure that these businesses can stay in Oakland. So they have representatives from all the city. They're meeting with the vice mayor. They report back to the mayor, and they're talking about these things that, you know, obviously commercial space is very limited. It's also very expensive. And there's also this idea of where do you shop and how do you spend your money. So I think Oakland in particular is looking to create more avenues to advocate on behalf of small business owners.
Are there other cities that we can look to for models for supporting local businesses? Like Portland mm-hmm. has some amazing programs.
Yes, and New Orleans has an amazing program too, and Sonoma, that are a little bit more close to home. So they do a lot of really great things. I think that one of the strengths of small business alliances such as Oakland Grown is really working with small business owners and also linking that to consumers and creating this awareness in the community of what it means to shop local. So they'll have, you know, their websites which have directories of the small businesses within the city and in the communities. They have community calendars to show what's happening in the community and the different, you know, events in the different neighborhoods. And they also have just different incentives to really get people to go there. So, you know, stickers or posters, very simple things that really make a difference when a consumer is looking for a place to shop.
Right. Alia, what are your thoughts on that? Do you think that city officials are doing enough to support small businesses at a time when we're looking for all the numbers, but commercial space is skyrocketing in Oakland, $24 a square foot. Right now it's around $70. So are officials doing enough to support small businesses?
I definitely think that the city officials could be doing more. I currently am in a city building, and it has been a challenge for us to secure a long-term lease in that space. So there's definitely a lot more that I think the city of Oakland could be doing. I also know there's a lot of competing priorities right now in Oakland, with like housing challenges and challenges with police department. And, you know, there's so many different things the city is managing right now, but I definitely feel like there could be some more support for local small businesses and local artists that are really being pushed out. I've seen so many amazing spaces that really created the fabric of what makes Oakland so amazing and unique, and that's drawing all of these people go away because they couldn't afford to stay and continue to serve the community in the way that they were, because prices have gone through the roof.
Mm. We have an email from Denise, and this is so important. She says, if you're concerned about global warming, then you don't want to shop at Amazon. Amazon uses more packing, 2.5 times more than purchasing local. The material used for even the smallest items contribute to global warming, such as plastic, bubble wrap, and cardboard. That is so true. Sometimes, for example, we get books here, and sometimes the publisher sends a book in a huge box surrounded by bubble wrap. And that is what always happens when you shop online. Denise goes on to say, there's so many benefits to local shopping. Less driving, less packaging, more money for local taxes. In contrast, less money goes to Amazon, where they park their money in tax havens. Local goods are usually made locally. Returning items is easier, she goes on. And I'm so glad you brought that up, Denise. What about that, Susanna? There's no getting around it if you shop online. You're going to get a ton of stuff around the thing you bought.
Yeah.
Right?
Absolutely. And I think that, you know, we all think that it's really convenient to just click away and shop online, but it doesn't compare to the idea of shopping, you know, locally and going into a store and having a conversation and asking questions about where it was made and how it was made and the designers and a lot of the things that we're seeing in Oakland, because we have a really amazing community around the local designers and all of the different things that are happening, is that you get to know who made the dress you're wearing, or you get to see where it was made. You get to have that connection with a person, and you just don't if you shop online.
Mm. Well, thank you again, Denise, for that email. Today, we're talking about the importance of buying local and this new report that just came out from the Institute for Local Self-Reliance called Amazon's Stranglehold, How the Company's Tightening Grip is Stifling Competition, Eroding Jobs, and Threatening Communities. You can read that report at yourcallradio.org. We're joined today by Susanna Morales-Konishi, Executive Director of Oakland Grown. It's a program that supports the local economy by encouraging citizens to shop local. Susanna is a small business owner and grew up in Oakland's Fruitvale District. What is the name of your business?
It's Communities in Collaboration.
And what does it do?
It's a small consulting firm. We focus around participatory evaluation and community engagement.
And we're also joined by Alia Baker. She opened Show and Tell Concept. It's a sustainable boutique in downtown Oakland. She's been running it since 2011. And if you'd like to join us, the toll-free number is 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. Let's hear from Alex in Oakland. Hi, Alex. Welcome to the show.
No, it's Alec, actually.
Oh, hi, Alec.
My comment is simply that this is all the fault of the American public that wants everything cheap. If you want it cheap, you're not going to pay enough money to keep local stores going. It's that simple. I mean, that's why the Fruitvale, all these streets used to have pharmacies and hardware and all these little stores. But when everybody wanted to go to Home Depot, those all died. Hmm. So unless the public wants to support these places, the city's not going to be able to do anything to keep them in business.
Well, thank you. It reminds me of the title of a book. I don't remember the author's name, but it's called The High Cost of Cheap. Mm-hmm. We're getting all this cheap stuff, but at what cost? Mm-hmm. Now, we do have an email from Bridget who says, why are people using Amazon? I have a family with children. We're involved in activities, a full-time job, hours of time spent volunteering. At the end of the day, I barely have time to do the laundry. Shopping locally is a luxury for parents and families like mine, not necessarily because of the cost, although that's huge. There's just no time. She writes, I use Amazon begrudgingly.
Hmm.
What would you say? Susanna?
Go ahead.
Aliyah, go ahead.
Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say that when I opened Show and Tell in 2011, the mission was actually to kind of shift the mindset and shift the paradigm. We've gotten so conditioned to getting everything, you know, fast and furious that I think people really need to take a step back and understand that there is a really kind of long impact when you choose to shop with Amazon. You know, that's definitely going to impact your community, the community that your children will grow up in, what they have access to, what they understand. So it's a hard decision, and I do kind of totally understand that. As an entrepreneur, I have no time, and yet I still make an effort to go to a smaller business when I have that option. You know, I could go to Starbucks, for instance, to buy my coffee, or I could go to Awaken Cafe or Open Cafe that's in downtown Oakland, and you know, maybe it takes a little bit longer, maybe the price is a little bit higher, slightly higher, but it's really an investment in my community, and an investment in kind of the community for the future.
Sandy writes in, my spouse is disabled and uses Amazon because she cannot go out. Do a lot of elders use Amazon because of the difficulty or the impossibility of finding parking in Oakland and San Francisco? Sandy, I don't think that this study got that detailed, but that makes sense. It's convenient for a lot of people.
Yeah. And so Oakland actually offers free parking on Saturdays for the entire holiday season. And they do that in a way to incentivize people to stay in their communities and shop local. Mm. But parking is a huge issue in Oakland and in San Francisco's beyond.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah. Thank you for that email. Let's go next to Gifford in San Francisco. Hi, Gifford.
Hi. I've really enjoyed the show. And I wanted to make a comment and also refer to a book you talked about, Rose. It's called Cheap, The High Cost of Discount Culture. And it's a history of retail, but it also talks about production and how we manufacture things. And it makes the point that we didn't choose as consumers to rip up the garment sweatshops in Chinatown in Oakland or San Francisco and send them to Bangladesh or Vietnam or Cambodia. It's the biggest players in the global economic system, like Walmart, did much earlier than Amazon. So I think the question really is how do we produce things and where do we produce them? There used to be a lot of garments produced in Oakland or San Francisco. Oakland used to make cars. They used to call Oakland the Detroit of the West. And that doesn't happen anymore. So it creates a contradiction. We could buy things locally, but they're going to be produced all across the world and not only in the cheapest countries, but everywhere. If you look like an iPhone, it's produced in Japan and Korea and China, and parts are coming from the United States. So how do we really fight against the system? And I think one weakness is like labor organizing all along the supply chain, and I'll leave it there. Thank you.
Yeah, it's such a good point. In fact, the New York Times had a piece last week about the global supply chain, and a lot of people are wondering what's going to happen under Donald Trump if he was honest about what he said about trade. I mean, you've got parts of one small thing coming from six different countries, and how is that going to affect this global supply chain? I think it's a great show we should have in the new year, just manufacturing, the global supply chain, what would it take to bring jobs back? Is this something that you talk about in the small business community, Susanna?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that, you know, we're very much aware of that. And I think that some of the businesses that we work with are taking that a step further. And so even when they shop from other designers outside of Oakland, they're still local designers and they still know who the people are and where they're getting their things made. So I think that there's, you know, a sustainability model also to sourcing and bringing things to the community, just like other communities do as well.
Right. Do you have anything to add on that one, Aliyah?
No, I think Susanna pretty much said exactly what I would say. You know, it's definitely when you for instance, come into my shop, you are probably supporting 3, 4, you know, 5 different local businesses that all participated in getting this one kind of garment or piece of jewelry into the shop. You know, the people who make the tags, the people who supply the bags, the people who run the local fabric shop. There's a lot of folks that you touch with that single garment, and we know all of those real people behind the product.
We're almost out of time, but we've got a number of ideas from listeners. Kai says, what if businesses and makers took a camera and talked about the process involved in making the item? Right? Like, yeah, this person made it, and that would be interesting.
Yeah, that would be.
Because you feel more connected to the item.
Yeah.
I was going to say that's actually a huge part of the shop and why we call it show and tell, because the idea is that every single piece in the store has been selected and has a story and a person behind it. And it's a part of re-educating the customer every time they come in. Who is the person who made this? And where can you find their work? You know, I don't carry everyone's entire line, so where can you find their work outside of my shop, and how can you continue to support them, and, you know, how can we grow these local brands beyond just Oakland?
And quick question, we're almost out of time, but thinking about Sandy, who wrote in about her disabled spouse who goes online, and then Bridget said she's just too busy. I mean, a lot of people feel that way. Is there a place online where people can go to support local businesses?
I mean, every...
Definitely.
Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, yeah. I was going to say, a lot of local businesses have their own websites. I offer, you know, shipping from my store. You can call us and we can send something to you. A lot of local businesses are willing to kind of go above and beyond and deliver, you know, to your door via courier if they need to get the product to you, if you're really interested in kind of working with them on that process. So we try to make it as convenient as possible.
All right, well, we'll put links to the stores we talked about today and other links that might make it easy, because I'm glad that these listeners wrote in. A lot of people can't leave their home for various reasons. Mm-hmm. And so if there was an online marketplace for local communities, that would be an amazing offering. Well, thank you for all of your phone calls and emails. Susanna Morales-Konishi is Executive Director of Oakland Grown, and Alia Baker is the owner of the Show and Tell Concept Shop. It's a sustainable boutique in downtown Oakland. Susanna and Alia, thank you so much for joining us. And thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's Your Call. On the next Your Call, how are scientists standing up to Donald Trump's anti-science policies? Science historian Naomi Oreskes will join us to discuss climate change and scientific research under Trump. At Tuesday's Save Science rally in San Francisco, she said this is a frightening moment. We've seen how the reins of the federal government are being handed over to the fossil fuel industry, and we have to do something. So how are scientists fighting back? Join us live at 10 a.m. on the next Your Call with me, Rose Aguilar, and you. Support for Your Call comes from the listeners of KALW. To listen to past shows or sign up for our podcast, visit yourcallradio.org. Laura Flynn produces the show. Malihe Razazan is senior producer. Matt Martin is executive producer. And Helena Murphy is our intern and researcher. Phil Hartman is our chief engineer. And Kevin Vance is our studio engineer. Our theme music is performed and composed by Live Human. You can email us at feedback@yourcallradio.org.